I wonder if any generation has seen such great changes as we who were born at the turn of the 20th century. Oxen pairs pulled wagons filled with salt hay by our front door. No one had indoor plumbing. Only a few townspeople had telephones. Horses were the preferred mode of transportation, and no one worried about germs. Life was quite different back then. My name is Mary Field Terrell. I was not born in Madison, but I moved here when I was very young. I spent much of my childhood in a home on Wall Street, with Hull's Hardware at one end and Horace Hunter's funeral parlor and photography studio at the other. Though I spent my life capturing the beauty of the world through my artworks, the stories I will share today mostly come from a journal that I began in 1958 when I was about to become a grandmother. I wanted my future grandchildren to be able to vividly imagine the world back then, and with my artwork to help me, I had many clear memories. Certain sounds carry me straight back to my childhood on Wall Street. I would lie in bed listening as men walked past our house, each one whistling as he went. I could hear the tune approach, drift past, and fade into the distance. My sister Julie, 12 years older than I, told me that when boys came courting, they stayed outside and whistled to announce themselves. She said Madison boys had a jolly, rollicking whistle, while the Guilford fellows used a slow, mournful tune that sounded especially lonely on a foggy night. Horses were the heartbeat of the town. Across the street from us was Charlie Scranton's livery stable. I knew every one of his horses by name and by hoofbeat. When I heard a horse trotting up Wall Street, I'd close my eyes and try to guess which horse it was. Each horse sounded its own special note on the soft dirt road. In winter, each horse also had a special set of bells. With the first good snow, the sleigh bells rang gaily in all the notes of the octave. Every house on the wall had a well for water, oil lamps, gardens, and livestock. We could have lived independently if we had to. We bought milk for 5 cents a quart and stored apples by the barrel. Seafood was plentiful, and Papa often brought back shellfish from the beach. Meals followed a steady rhythm. Oyster stew on Fridays, baked beans on Saturdays, cold roasts on Sundays, and leftovers through the week. We all ate what was set before us with no complaints. Every house had an outhouse. Ours stood behind a lattice tangled with red rambling roses, reached by a wooden path that sounded hollow underfoot at night. In summer, it was no hardship to sit with the door open and look up at the gold stars. In winter, we carried a lantern, sometimes coaxing the dog to join us for company. You might think this odd today, but we found comfort in those little houses with a view no indoor bathroom could match. Sundays began at sundown on Saturday. Children could not play games, and even a walk on the beach had to be taken sedately. Sunday clothes were our only real finery. All week, Papa went barefoot in blue jeans and a cotton shirt, but on Sunday, he wore a stiff suit, tight collar, shoes, and stockings. My mother often lamented women's clothes, their many skirts dragging on the ground. She especially hated going to New Haven at Christmas time, trying to hold parcels and lift her hem from the unsanitary floors. She rejoiced when Theodore Roosevelt ordered railroads to post signs saying, "Do not spit on the floor." The holiday season held some of my happiest memories. I would lie awake and hear the soft whir of Mama's sewing machine, hoping she was making clothes for a new doll. We gathered greens in the woods and twisted them into wreaths. Our tree, fragrant with hemlock, was lit with real candles, carefully watched with a bucket of water nearby. On Christmas morning, we received a new toy, a bag of hard candy, and a precious orange, the only orange we would taste all winter. After dinner, the family crowded round the piano to sing, O Little Town of Bethlehem. As we sang, I remember thinking that Bethlehem sounded as lovely as Madison. Before the day of summer cottages, the beach lay wide and empty. We went only a few times each summer, for it was a long, hot walk over dusty roads. Few people owned bathing suits. Little girls waded in old cotton dresses to their knees. No woman truly swam. They held hands in little circles, dipped together, shrieked together, and hurried out within minutes. Then Madison welcomed the summer people. Summer boarders properly dressed for bathing. Puffed sleeves, sailor collar, black stockings, rubber shoes, and a cap tied tight. They wore white dresses in the morning, carried parasols, employed maids, and had dinner served at night. We divided them neatly into two kinds, those who had always had money and were gracious, and those newly rich who were inclined to show it. Their presence helped the town. The stores prospered and the church thrived on their generosity. Once I heard a newcomer say, "It's hard to get acquainted in New England. The people don't talk much." New Englanders may not talk much, but that is not because they are unfriendly. The first settlers had known so much suffering, and the seafaring men had to sharpen their focus and watch the weather. The farmers took the rocks from the hills and built the miles of stone fences in Madison. They toiled from dawn to dusk, their only companions their oxen and horses. These men had little breath left for idle chatter. Their wives worked hard too. Though they chatted at fellowship meetings and church socials, they had little time to socialize at home. They were too busy with chores of the inner home and chores of the outdoors that the men could not get to, like caring for the livestock and cultivating the crops. If you are a New Englander, you will understand all of this. You also understand that if trouble strikes, your neighbor will be there to help you. You will feel the warmth of her friendship without words. Our family had come to Madison in 1600 and something. Most had lived and died in Madison, and the cemetery was full of our relatives. And even though I left Madison to raise my children in another place, I came back, and so did they. I moved into a little pink house that my father had built for me on Seaview Avenue. It had plenty of room for my flowers in the backyard and vines of wisteria and roses growing up and around the porch. And at the center of that flowery frame, the gentle waves of the Long Island Sound winked and sparkled with sunlight as if to welcome me home.